welcome to the Audit 15 Fun podcast. My goal of this podcast is to bring relevant internal audit topics to the table at least every 15 days. Today, I have the honor to have as my guest, Clarissa Lucas. She is the author of the book, Beyond Agile Auditing. Thank you, Clarissa, for joining. And I have the honor to have as my guest, co-hosts, I should say, Rob Berry, also known as That Audit Guy, and host of the Audit Bites and Friday Fraudster podcast, and Tracy Marquardt. She is the host of the podcast Inspiring Women in Audit and Communication Expert. Welcome all to the podcast. It's an honor to have you all on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So the title of the episode is Hot Seat. So I was just mentioning to Clarissa here right before the episode started, my goal is for you at the end of this interview to want nothing more than for the interview to be over.
So now we're taking side bets on how far into the episode before I start crying.
There you go. So each of us, so just for the benefit of the audience really quick here, I have two questions. Rob has two questions. Tracy has two questions. We shared the questions with each other before the episode, Clarissa. We did not share them with you.
I know, keeping me in the dark.
Rob, I'll have you go first. What is your question for Clarissa?
You know, so before I ask my question, I think we should just all give you a round of applause for the Let's Get Ready to Rumble voice in the beginning.
Yeah,
I mean, that's quite impressive. Okay, so my first question, and let me frame it, because anytime there's something new, people are apprehensive, whether it's our audit clients or our individual auditors in our audit department. And I think it's up to us to really set the stage so that our auditors can be successful when it comes to change. So my question is, how do you approach building effective communication and collaboration within the audit team when it comes to practicing agile auditing?
Love that question. And before I answer, I'm going to give a quick little disclaimer. So the views and opinions I express here are solely my own and do not reflect the views or opinions of any of my employers. So now that we've got that out of the way, so your question is around building effective communication and collaboration within the audit team. And I'm also going to do a quick distinction because you mentioned agile auditing. My platform is Auditing with Agility, which is slightly different from agile auditing. So I can give a quick hot take on that, and then I can dive into that question. So agile auditing, for those who are not as familiar, it gained popularity a couple years ago, and it is basically applying the Scrum or Sprint-based framework to completing audit. So Sprint is just a time box. So really, when we think about agile auditing, thinking about breaking the timeline of the audit into, we'll call them 2-week time boxes called sprints, and delivering whatever you have at the end of each of those sprints. So every 2 weeks during an audit, you're going to be delivering what you have. Agile auditing can be very useful in certain situations, but one of the problems that we ran into as a profession was we lost sight of why we were moving to agile auditing, which was to deliver timely, to be able to adapt to change, to incorporate feedback loops early and often throughout the audit process. We lost sight of that, and we got focused on, okay, this organization is having success with agile auditing. What are they doing? They're doing sprints. So I need to do sprints. So I'm going to do sprints, and I'm going to measure success by how many audits am I doing in sprints. Then we start doing all of our audits in sprints, but forgetting why we were doing sprints in the first place. And so we were doing agile auditing, but not getting the outcomes that we wanted. So all that to say, so that's why I started promoting what I call auditing with agility, which is anchoring back to those desired outcomes that we want, and finding the practices that are best going to achieve those outcomes. So sprints could be a tool in the agility toolbox that you use. But I use the term auditing with agility versus agile auditing to focus more on the practice of operating with agility rather than doing all sprints all the time. So little sidebar there. So I'm going to twist the question about how to encourage effective communication and collaboration within the audit team when we operate with agility. Is that a fair twist on the question?
Fair enough. Right. Yeah.
Fair. Okay. So one of the key things when we think about operating with agility is that we are focused on the same goal. So instead of some of the habits, the bad habits we get into as auditors is I have my work that I need to do to contribute to the audit. Robert, you have your work that you need to do contribute to the audit. Tracy, you do. And so John, so do you. And we get our assignments and we go to our desk and we do our stuff. There's some challenges with that sometimes. So I may finish last. Let's say I'm really slow with my work and Robert, you get your stuff done really quickly. Well, now you're sitting there with nothing to do and I'm overwhelmed because I'm taking forever to do my stuff. What would solve that is collaboration and communication. So to facilitate that, what we really want to do is make sure that we're all aligned on achieving the same goal, right? So our goal is not to get our stuff done. Our goal is to provide assurance and advice to our key stakeholders. So if we can align on that, we need to then think about how can we best collaborate to make sure that we're all aligned and working towards that goal.
I love it.
Tracy, you're up next.
So I'm going to follow along that line of questioning, not within the team, but with your audit client. First, I want to say, Clarissa, this is a fabulous book. And for everybody who's listening to this podcast, should, I hope, go out and buy a copy and share it within their team and within their organization, because it is a fabulous book. I started speaking about agile audit communication in 2018, and this is, I think, what we were all waiting for. So
thank you. That means
congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So my question relates to this pushback that auditors sometimes get at the end of the audit, where everyone has agreed operationally on what the issues are, and they come into the closing meeting, and then an executive walks in and sits down and says, no, I don't agree with any of this. So what practical advice can you give an audit team to help them persuade their audit client to meet them and collaborate regularly, e.g. daily stand-ups, but at the right level of management to avoid that surprise pushback at the end?
You said sometimes get pushback. Unfortunately, I've experienced a lot of pushback more often than sometimes, if we're going to the never, sometimes, often, than always. But I have been, and Tracy, you've taught me a lot about report writing and things like that and communication that help. So I'm stealing some of your concepts, or I guess I'll say borrowing them with this. But with the clients, I'm going to expand what I mentioned in response to Robert's question to our clients as well. So not only are we as auditors aligned towards a specific goal, but as internal auditors, we are uniquely positioned to be aligned to share a goal with our clients as well. So we're employed by the same organization that our clients are. They want the organization to succeed. We want the organization to succeed, because if it doesn't succeed, none of us prosper. So it's framing our work. So there's a couple pieces to this. First of all, is framing the work to make sure that we're all aligned towards that common goal of helping the organization succeed. And we do that by bringing different perspectives and skill sets to the table. So management's running the business, and I'm oversimplifying, but that's kind of how I think about things. Management's running the business, and that's their contribution to helping the organization succeed. We're coming in with a fresh perspective and asking different questions that they might not be thinking of because they're focused on what they're doing and running the business. But both of those together are going to help us succeed as an organization. Auditors without clients, I mean, what are we without our clients, right? And clients without a fresh perspective aren't set up for as much success either. So aligning on that common goal and keeping that in mind and anchoring back to that throughout the entire process is really helpful. The other piece of, okay, so we can't have our, sometimes we can, but in most cases, we can't have our top executives in every daily stand-up or every meeting that we're having. So I really rely on my clients to help communicate to their leaders what's going on. And how do you incentivize them to do that, right? Because again, they're running the business. So audit coming in and saying, can you tell your leaders this? Like, okay, they're not really super incentivized. So first of all, and one of the three core components of auditing with agility is value-driven auditing. And really the goal of that is to align our work as auditors with what's most important and most valuable to the organization. So when we do that, we get buy-in from our clients that the stuff that we're doing is important. We're not wasting their time by pulling on these ticky-tacky things that don't make a difference to the organization. We're not calling out things just for the sake of filling our reports with issues and findings. We're focusing on the things that really matter to our client. Because we're building that with the day-to-day contacts that we have with our clients, what I've seen is they're starting to market our findings and our results, because our results are more than just findings. It's the assurance as well, although we typically don't get pushback on these controls are effective, but we like to make sure that they're marketing our result for us. So what I mean by that is they buy into the results that we have. So this control, they bought in early because we're having those feedback loops with them and involving them in the process. They know that this control is super important. So if it's broken, they want it fixed because it's going to hinder them from achieving their goals. So bringing them in early and often will help them. And by them, I mean our clients. And I'm not trying to do the us versus them. So our clients, when we bring our clients in early and often and we show them the value of what we're doing, they are more likely to then communicate that to their leaders. And when that leader, that senior leader, walks into your exit meeting, you might find that your clients are the ones explaining the issues and the findings to them rather than the auditors, which is a really awesome experience. So collaboration early and often, and aligning on that same goal.
That's great. Thanks. I would love to see that experience happen where the audit client is actually marketing to their executive. Brilliant. Thank you.
My pleasure.
All right. My question is, my question is kind of related to your first answer. You're talking about aligning on desired outcomes, aligning on goal. Our goal is to provide assurance to stakeholders. So that's like when Agile is working, right? Agile is working. That's what we're getting to. If you think on the flip side, what are some indicators, call them leading indicators, that you may be able to measure to say, yeah, I'm doing Agile and it is working, before we get to the end, if that makes sense?
So leading indicators that you're on the right path and operating with agility versus waiting till we get to the end.
Yes.
So you actually nailed the answer in the question, is you want to find that feedback early and often. So you don't want to wait till the end. Just like we don't want to wait to the end to surprise our clients with our findings, right? Or our results. Because that usually doesn't end well unless our results are everything is operating effectively, good job, which those are my favorite audit reports. I tell my clients, put those on your fridge. That's awesome. But we don't want to surprise our clients by waiting to the end to provide them with that feedback on what we're looking at. We don't want to wait till we get to the end of the audit to say, did we do okay in this? Regardless of whether you're operating under an agile sprint method, whether you're trying to operate with agility or whatever your operating model is, the key is, and you're going to hear this theme probably a couple of times, depending, I haven't seen the questions, but I know one of the themes that I have this year is incorporating more feedback loops. So figuring out what it is you want to accomplish, and if it's stronger relationships with your clients, if it's greater collaboration within your audit team, intentionally pause and check in on that. So we can come up with some different KPIs of what those might be, but really it is, how do you know where you're starting? How do you know what success looks like at the end? And check in frequently throughout to figure out, where are we against that goal? What's going well and helping to contribute to us achieving that goal? And what's getting in the way, or what might we change and do differently to help us realign and achieve that goal? One of the things that I like to, and I encourage groups to do this both internally and with our clients, and Robert, I'm looking at you for internally, and Tracy with clients based on your first questions, is having, if we think about agile auditing and Scrum, there were retrospective reviews that would be done at the end of each sprint. I would say if you're looking for a framework, do a retrospective review at frequent intervals during your audit. Do it internally, do it with your client. Ask what's going well. And you can even, to your point, John, is targeted to this specific outcome, because this is what we're trying to accomplish here. What's going well towards achievement of that outcome? Where are we struggling? Where can we do better? What might we change in the next week or 2 weeks or between now and the next time we connect, which should be pretty frequently, and then make those adjustments along the way. So that's just incorporating feedback loops. I think that's a theme. If people take one thing away from this, it is incorporate feedback loops early and often. And that's probably going to solve or at least get you on the path to a solution for most of the problems we're running into.
Yeah, love the answer. And yeah, I mean, I know a lot of internal audit shops, they do just a survey at the end, right? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you're doing an informal survey throughout the project versus just a formal survey at the end.
And there's nothing wrong with getting the feedback at the end. But if you think about it, again, think about incentives. So what incentive does your client have to provide you thoughtful feedback at the end of the audit? At that point, if for organizations that are going through a cycle-based audit approach, you're not going to be back in that area and audit that client for another year, 2 years, 5 years, I don't know, depending on what your cycle is. So are they really going to spend the time to give you that constructive feedback and help you when they're not going to see the results of it for another 5 years? They might, but they're also more incentivized if you ask them, hey, John, over the next 2 weeks, what can I do better? How can I make this experience more valuable for you, create less friction for you? And then you provide me that feedback and I start taking action on it. You're going to see the results right away, or at least see that I'm trying, because we experiment with things and they don't always work. That's going to give you more incentive to provide that feedback. So nothing wrong with the end. Just don't wait till the end.
Right. Mr. Barry, you're next.
All right. So, all right, John, I'm going to throw a little curveball in, because based on the discussion so far, I had another thought that popped in my head. So I'm going to ask what might be a two-part question, maybe a multi-part question with one probably big answer. Let me just explain and then it'll make more sense. So let me say, I believe in auditing with agility. I think it is the only way to go because it makes you more efficient, but also more effective. And also it gives you better perceived value from your clients because you're honing in on what's important to them. So all around, it's a win. However, I think that there's something happening right now that may impede the progress auditing with agility. And if you look at the new standards that have just come out, so now we have a requirement to do a risk assessment annually. Now, we all know that we should probably be doing it more regularly than that because our risks are fluid, but also they've introduced topical requirements, which are going to take up a lot of time, effort, and energy. And some of that is going to be unnecessary time, effort, and energy. So my big question, two-part question, I can see John looking like, uh-oh, you really struck a nerve here.
But oh, you're letting Clarissa know that feeling of
I hope this is over.
Well, no, but I mean, as you can tell, I'm actually on Clarissa's side on this one when it comes to auditing with agility. But I really think that this could have a negative impact on its progress, and I don't want to see that happen. So tell me, what are your thoughts on how some of these new developments will affect traditional audit planning? So that's part one. And part two is, within auditing with agility, what are some practical tips to help auditors balance speed, being, you know, having agility, but also still maintaining quality? Now, that was the core part of my question. And then I started thinking about these topical requirements, because honestly, I'm having a hard time coming to terms with the reality of them setting in and how it's going to impact us and our work.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked the two-part question. Let me answer the first one, and then I'll go to the second one. And this is probably why the disclaimer I put out there, because this is going to be completely Clarissa's opinion. I am not a fan of topical requirements. I do think it goes against agility. The whole purpose of operating with a sense of agility is to make sure that you are focused on the right things at the right time for that particular organization. We all represent different organizations that are facing different operating environments in different industries and different countries or different global footprints. So what is important, and I'm going to pick on cybersecurity since that's the first proposed topical requirement that's out there, and I have not looked at it yet, so that is a fault of mine to not have the details there, but just on a conceptual basis, having an organization say that these are the most important risks and you must test these things or include these things in your scope or test them these ways is not principle-based. It hinders our ability to insert our judgment. I mean, that's why we're here, is for a professional judgment. The checkbox things, we can automate that. We can get machine learning and all the cool technology to do that stuff. We're here for our judgment and those types of things. And that completely gets in the way of being able to do that. And it's saying you must spend your time on these things. When in reality, and cybersecurity is a big risk. Like if there's a board that's not talking about it, then that's a problem probably. But having those specific requirements and saying this is a blanket approach that has to be applied in every situation, it's not the right direction. So I'm not excited about that. I hope that the Institute of Internal Auditors reconsiders the making them a requirement and having them more of guidance or for consideration or if you want to do it to do, if this is your top risk and your only risk, here's things you might consider, or having a menu of things to pick from. But it just, I agree with you that it is a roadblock to operating with true agility, and it gets us back to that whole checklist auditing that we got to get away from. So let me pause there on that one before I answer the second part. Thoughts, questions? Feel free to disagree with me. That's fair. I am super opinionated on that one, but that's something I feel really strongly about.
Right there with you. I mean, agree 100%. It's an extreme concern.
And even if you take the agile word out of there, just saying we want to be effective internal auditors, I don't need a checklist to tell me how to be effective. Like, that's what my experience is for. That's why I have conversations with key stakeholders. That's why I stay up on listening to awesome podcasts and understanding what's going on and how that might apply to my organization. So even if we're not talking from an agile perspective, like just being a good auditor, we need to be able to insert our professional judgment. So stepping off that soapbox and going back to your second part of the question about practical tips on how to balance speed with quality. So this is another thing that people, when they hear agile, they think speed. Not necessarily about speed and getting things done faster, it's delivering results sooner. So the best tip that I can give is break down your work into manageable chunks so you can deliver on each of those chunks. And so you're hearing, oh, this might be sprints. You can do this in sprints. You don't have to do it in sprints. Like I'm trying to use not the terminology that kind of got us caught up before. But think about, here's the things that you want to cover in this audit. Here's the most important things. Prioritize them. I like to ask my team, if you could only audit one control, what would it be? Or one risk, what would it be? And that goes to the top of the list. Okay, now if we do that, what would be the next thing that we do? And another way to ask it is order these things top to bottom. So if we get pulled onto something else, so something changes, and this was, they used the example of the pandemic. You know, let's say there's a global pandemic and we have to shift our focus to something else and we have to stop the audit. What would we be okay with not focusing on as much? And that way you're focusing on delivering value and delivering results for those most important things, those top priorities, and deliver whenever you finish those things. So it could be in a timed cadence. It could just be, here's this one risk and we're going to test the controls, the key controls with this risk and deliver those results. So that way you're still delivering things sooner. You're not necessarily doing anything faster, but you're just getting those results in your client's hands sooner. And it's on the things that make the most sense and add the most value to the organization. So that'd be my one tip.
I really like that because, well, the one big benefit in doing that too is you really get to satisfy your client's emotional need to know what's happening. Mm-hmm. I'm actually working on a QAR right now for an organization. And one of the big comments was, I feel like the audits take too long. And so I started digging into it. And when I dug into it with them, the audits really weren't taking that long. It was their perception and their perspective on it. So mm-hmm. I think when you audit with agility, you get results faster and your clients get them faster. And psychologically, it makes them think better of you because it really is just a psychological game with us.
Yep. You're not panicked. I think of it like when the toddler is quiet, when you can hear what they're doing, it's okay. When they're quiet, that's when you panic because like something must be going wrong. So if the auditors are quiet and you're not hearing anything from them, inherently our clients, and I've been on the other side of the table too, I've been the audit client, and you're thinking, oh gosh, something must be wrong. You're not thinking, oh, everything's great and it's smooth. So yeah, keeping them informed helps it reduce some of that anxiety that they might be feeling.
That's it exactly.
Tracy.
Which leads me to my favorite topic in the world, Clarissa. As you know, there's going to be a question on audit reporting.
Yep. I'd be disappointed if there wasn't.
I'm a firm believer in getting those results to the business sooner. The challenge I find is that some audit leadership don't see the need to report on an iterative basis. So how would you persuade audit leadership to make the leap from traditional waiting a long period for that final audit report to iterative reports? And is it somehow, I think it's tied to mindset.
Oh, 100% mindset. Everything that we're talking about here is a shift in mindset, which makes it challenging too. So I tell people, I can't just say like, do these five things and like, you're there. It is a mindset shift. And we've been working in these ways that we've been working. I mean, basically my entire career. And then when things get tough, just as human beings, when we're trying to change and things get challenging, we revert back to what's comfortable, which is what we always know, even though it might not be the smoothest path forward. So for that mindset shift, I would look for, again, aligning on a common goal. We want to, regardless of whether it's a report or what it is, we want to get these results in our clients' hands. And when we can get that buy-in from, and maybe it's not that top executive, which we still have to work on, when they come in at the end, they can't just kind of put a stop to everything. So getting our day-to-day contacts on board, and when we're aligning our work with value and communicating those results, so I get into, and I'm not as familiar with the new standards, so I know previously it was just communicating results. We didn't need to have an actual report. When we communicate those results, our clients can then start taking action on them, which then helps solidify the, okay, not only is there this gap, because we're going to assume there was a gap. Now management has started taking action on it and started resolving that gap, which paints a different picture. So that can help. It might not be an iterative report, but iterative communication. And then when management starts taking action on it, that helps kind of, I'll say, soften the blow a little bit as well. The other piece of it is it may not be issuing the final report or the final communication, but sharing the for the written results and written reports, sharing it in the format that final report will be in softens the blow as well. So we have all these conversations throughout and we talk about the language, we talk about the rating, we talk about all of the owner. But for some reason, when our clients see it in the report format, it's totally different. It's like it's new. So it may not even be, I'm going to issue this report iteratively, but I am going to share it in its draft format iteratively and start updating the progress too. So I think those are some things that can help. But Tracy, you nailed it, is that it is a mindset shift. It's not something that you can just switch to build that trust with our clients, because this is new for them too. It's new for us as auditors, but it's new for them too. They've always had a waterfall approach. They've always, not always, but for the longest time, had results shared at the end and not throughout. So taking a little bit of perspective taking and empathy there to understand that this is incredibly new for them as well, I think helps too.
Thank you. And I do think it doesn't need to be in a report format, but traditionally we're all sitting around waiting for that final audit report. Yep. And sometimes it takes such a long time that you even question the value anymore. Yep. And I love to inspire others like you're doing to make those changes throughout the fieldwork phase so that they do get those outcomes to the business quicker and they can react quicker. So thank you.
And Tracy, building off of that, I talk about incentives. So your clients are incentivized as well to start making progress on those. So when we get to that final, the last report we're going to issue, we can show the progress that they've made, which also tells a better story to their leaders too. So not just, you know, traditionally we hold them to the end and we say, look at all these gaps and all these risks that are not managed appropriately. We can say, here's what existed, but here's all we're left with now. Here's the progress that's been made. These ones have been closed and validated. These ones, there's already a plan in place and it'll be fixed sooner. So it helps to think of the incentive from our client's perspective too.
And that's the takeaway point for me. So thank you.
My pleasure.
All right. My last question, and compared to the previous questions, this is going to be an easy question, Clarissa.
I don't know. You're making me nervous with that one.
It is kind of similar to Tracy's first question. So there are internal audit departments across the globe that are very small, mid-size, large, right? Mm-hmm. At least from my experience, seeing agile methodology seems to work better when you have like an organization that's a little bit flatter. So mm-hmm. it's not a lot of hierarchy, right? So in your perspective, what are some of the different differences in approach if you're working for a small company versus mid-sized company versus large company?
So I'm going to answer a couple things here. So one of the concepts of the Scrum framework for software development, which is what agile auditing, sprint-based agile auditing was built on, was flattening the organization and flattening, not necessarily the org chart itself, but kind of leaving titles at the door and saying, we're all here for this common thing. I've got a Scrum Master that's not necessarily a higher title, but they have a specific role to keep us, keep our sprints where they're supposed to be, keep our stand-ups focused on what they're supposed to be. So they play a very particular role, but kind of that concept is flattened from a functional perspective and everybody's on the same playing field level. But when I think about agility, I'm also a fan of the whole leaving our titles at the door. So the difference in implementing concepts from agility from a small to medium to large, that's kind of the glory of agility, is it's not a one size fits all, because all of the organizations are different sizes, different cultures, different everything. When you think about moving a large organization, that's just going to take a lot more time. It's like moving a giant ship. I know Norman Marx gives the, you have a little speedboat versus a giant cruise ship or a freight line ship. It takes a lot more time and effort to move that than it does a smaller speedboat. So similar with, if you're a one-person audit shop, you've got one auditor's mindset to change. So still a challenge, but if you buy into it, okay, you still have your clients and your audit committee and everything, but that's a bit easier to change that mindset, or maybe not easier, but the timeline is a bit shorter. Whereas if you've got an audit shop that's a couple thousand people or 1,000 people, a couple hundred people, it's a lot more people that you need to convince. And so the way that you want to go about that in a larger shop, or basically any that you need to get more buy-in than just your one person, is starting with people who are really excited about it. So you'll find people that are, yep, I'm tired of our old ways of working. I like to be innovative. Let's try something else. You also find, I think, Robert, you said in the beginning about with change, people can be apprehensive. So you will find people who resist the change, who are just over change regardless of what you're proposing. So they don't want to change. Find people that are, I've heard this agile thing before, I'm not on board, whatever reasons, you'll get to them, but they're going to need a bit more convincing than the people that are excited. So start with your small wins, experiment with this group that is really excited about it. You got to make sure that they have a place where it is safe to experiment and succeed and fail, because some things will go really well, some things won't. So encourage them to keep trying. And for things that don't work out as you intended, just learn from them. And then that, to me, that's a success. So start small, start with that group that's excited, experiment, and then share your results. So share your results that aren't as pretty either. And show it's okay that this didn't work out. Here's what we learned. You'll get more people that are excited about it, especially when you have the successes. But I think it's also important to be transparent and show like this didn't go well and everybody's still okay and they're still excited about this. The more successes you build, which will take time, the more people you'll get on and the more, the less resistance you'll get. So in a larger, the bigger your shop is, the more you'll have to do that and the more time and grace you're going to have to give yourself. Whereas with a smaller shop, it's usually requires a little less buy-in because it's a much smaller group to convince.
Perfect. I like what you said there about a safe place to fail in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's something that Richard Chambers covers. Like he talks about internal audit is we're too stuck on like being perfect and
recovering perfectionist.
Yes.
It's tough. Still working on it.
Yes. Perfect. All right. Well, Clarissa, really appreciate your time here. And I should mention here, and I forgot to mention at the beginning, you're the host of the Control Freaks podcast. So for those who want to listen more from Clarissa, you can go to her podcast and listen to her episodes. So really do appreciate you being on the podcast, Clarissa, and Rob and Tracy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure. Thank you, all three of you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me again, John.